I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. And welcome to Minute 18 of Season 6 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we take a capricious journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Nick Rehack of the Rabbit Hole Podcast. Welcome back to the show, Nick.
Thank you for having me back, man.
Well, why don't you just drop a chair? Maybe you'll be more comfortable that way.
If there was anything worth listening to, I would.
So, minute 18 begins with Peter asking a question and ends with George trying to defend his decisions. Yesterday, we ended things with Peter and George having their conversation at the table. And, you know, Peter asks George what are his plans after college, trying to, veer George into a position where he will once again agree to maybe come back and work in the building and loan. Or saving and loan, you know, because that's what, you know, Peter sees that George has so much potential. And in this minute, we're going to get even more about that, you know. And so the minute begins with Peter saying, of course, it's just a hope. But you wouldn't consider coming back to the building and loan, would you? So, I mean, it just from the way that Peter says this, you can see how much he appreciates the work that George has put in and the skills that he has. And, you know, the idea that building and loan is so much better because George is there, you know, he's able to ease things, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But I mean, it just made me think of something. I mean, if George was constantly at the building and loan, maybe he wasn't there during the afternoon or whatever. Maybe that's what it was. No, because my question was going to be then, how come he didn't know about the fact that his father had a tussle with Potter during the course of the day? But then again, we did see George walking through town, you know, picking up his new suitcase and things like that. So maybe he just, you know, maybe he had already stopped working at the building and loan.
Yeah, he cut out early for the day or, you know, a couple days prior.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And George starts stammering as well. I you know, he doesn't really know how to respond here, you know, because he doesn't want to disappoint his father, I guess. I think that's what it comes down to.
No, but he wants to stay true to himself is too. Right. That's mm-hmm. That's how it is.
No, it's right. Yeah. It's a combination of both. On the one hand, he wants to stay true to himself because he wants to be this. He wants to do big things. You know, that's the way he's looking at it. You know, that you have to do something important in life, and the way to do it is to build. You know, whether it's to build up big skyscrapers or whatever it is. You know, George hasn't really understood what Peter already understands. And we'll talk a little bit about that today and tomorrow. And, you know, as George is putting his thoughts together as to what to say, he looks over and he sees Annie just standing there. And he says, well, why don't you drop a chair? Then you'd be more comfortable. And you can hear everything that's going on. And her response is great because she basically says, I would if I thought I'd hear anything worth listening to. And then he goes,
has a smile on my face.
Yes. Yes. It's, I mean, the dialogue here is amazing. You know, the whole movie has great dialogue. Again, it goes back to what you were saying earlier, and I've mentioned this before also. It's not something you would expect from a movie in 1946.
No. You would expect, like, a quippy comeback and then the person storms off and then the person feeling like, yeah, I got one over on them. But instead it's just they're ribbing each other. You know what I mean? That's they're right. Joking around and like he even like throws a wink at her and then kind of giggles a little bit. Like it's just, there's such a, and it goes back to when we first kind of, get in this scene here, just the jovial, just how even the conversation as it starts to kind of turn and get a little heavy, you know, sharing, you know, the desires and, you know, just kind of life in general, there's still a lightness in the room. Like, it's right. not so dark and deep where it's just like, you know, we're ruining it with these moments. Like, no, this is just how people would be. People would be having a serious conversation and then inject just a little bit of levity into it, you know, because at times I think we all realize like things are a little heavy and they don't necessarily need to be. And that's all this is. It's just I don't want to say people being people, but feels like people being people. It just all feels so natural.
Right. Right. And I mean, it's funny, though, because on the one hand, if they think of Annie as being part of the family, you know, why does she need to feel as if she needs to eavesdrop? You know, like, I mean, later in the week, we'll see that she's standing at the window at the door to the kitchen, you know, eavesdropping and stuff like that. So it got me thinking, OK, the word eavesdropping, do you know, like, first of all, what does eavesdropping mean?
I'm going to assume it comes from a previous phrase where someone was literally hanging off of a roof in order, like the eaves of a roof. They were hanging up in there in order to hear something while trying to like not fall, and to catch someone eavesdropping, like literally in the eaves, trying not to fall or drop into the conversation that they're overhearing.
Nick, that's amazing. It really is. An eavesdropper was somebody who would hang from the eave of a building so as to hear what is being said within. That is the definition of it. Yes, you did. You really nailed it there.
So proud of myself. I'm smiling ear to ear right now, dude.
That's great. I never would have thought about that. I never would have made the connection between the eaves of a roof, you know, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is the definition here, it says the act of secretly or stealthily listening to a private conversation or communication of others without their consent in order to gather information. Okay, so the question is what she's doing here considered eavesdropping? Because she's not doing it secretly. She's just – or because maybe she's pretending – maybe because she's tending to them that, you know, she's not supposed to be paying attention. Maybe that's the idea of why you would maybe call this eavesdropping.
Maybe.
You know, like I'm trying to think of what the term would be of what is exactly she's doing here. You know, if it's not eavesdropping.
Yeah, if it's not eavesdropping, I mean, it would be.
Because she's not out on the roof.
She's kind of loitering, maybe. She's just kind of hanging around, lingering a little bit.
Right. Lingering a little too much to want to hear where everything's going on. Again, not that the house is so big and not that you can't hear what's going on when you're in other rooms. But still, she wants to be there for that, you know, whole thing. Peter says to George, well, I know it's too soon to talk about it because, again, we're talking 4 years from now. It is a long time if you're looking at it from that perspective. You know, and then George gives a very long diatribe now, and he says, now, Pop, I couldn't. I couldn't face being cooped up for the rest of my life in a shabby little office. Oh, I'm sorry, Pop. I didn't mean to. But it's this business of nickels and dimes and spending all your life trying to figure out how to save 3 cents on the length of pipe. I'd go crazy. I want to do something big and something important. So, I mean, this says a lot about George's philosophy on life. You know, it goes back to what I said before, that as far as he's concerned, you know, if you don't do something big, then it's not worth it. You know, everyone has to see that you do something big. You know, and it's ironic that he's living in this small town and he believes that.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's most people, though, growing up, no matter where you grow up and you're like, I'm in this town. I'm still trying to really figure out who I am and what I'm about. I just know that I want to do something. I want to be big. And of course, we see it in TV shows and films, someone that goes from, you know, from nothing into something and just builds himself into this larger than life type figure. And I think a lot of people see that and they go for it. And right. Along the way, what's important to you starts to change a little bit. Your idea of success and what that is starts to change a little bit. Even the idea of I want to do something important. Well, doing something important could be, you know, running for a political office or designing a town. But something important could also be like, you know, working a dead end job, but spending all of your off time like volunteering at a homeless shelter or volunteering at animal shelter, things like that. Like, there's different ways to kind of bring that all out, but he's just kind of thinking kind of one track mind at the moment, which again, he's that age, so that's what's going to happen. I was right. the exact way
you were going to make $18 million before you hit 30. That was your plan
before I hit 30, and then here we are. I didn't quite make the mark, so
well, because of inflation. That's what it comes down
to. Exactly. And that's what got me, was the inflation.
There you go. But I mean, I also find it interesting that he basically disparages the building and loan and says a shabby little office, meaning that he's been working here in the building and loan maybe for 2 years, and maybe 3 years. I mean, again, we're not sure exactly of how long he was working there, but he's basically disparaging the place where he works and his father's family business by saying that it's this little shabby place.
Because what he doesn't realize, and his dad starts to kind of push him towards that realization, is that, it might be a shabby little place, but is doing big things, important things for people in the neighborhood, for people in the community, for those that don't have the means to do it for themselves. That's a place that they can go to help others. They're not putting the money into this big office with like sprawling sofas and people kind of hang on stuff. No, he's putting that money into the business. He's putting that money into the pockets of the people that need it.
George mentions nickels and dimes. So when do you think they first started using the nickel as a currency in the U.S.?
Ooh. I think the nickel goes back into the 1800s. I don't want to say like the 1830s or 1840s.
Okay. Well, originally it was called the nickel as a nickel, which is 5 cents, started being issued in 1866. Okay.
Okay. Kind of close.
But before that, they had what was known as a half dime. Okay. So, and the half dime was issued between 1792 and 1873. And then they phased it out as they were starting to bring around the nickel.
Makes sense.
Yeah. They started using the 2 cent and 3 cent pieces. And then they finally started using the 5 cent piece. First, they had the shield nickel. And then after that, that was until 1883. Then it was replaced by the Liberty head nickel, which was then replaced by the Buffalo nickel in 1913. Mm-hmm. And then they changed it to the Jefferson nickel in 1938. So when this movie came out, they already had the Jefferson nickel, but they were still, since this is 1928, they were still using the Buffalo nickel. And the difference between all these nickels was basically the design.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it was just that.
It's the same thing. They're all worth 5 cents. It wasn't a question of them being worth something else. It was just what they have, And, that in 2020, it cost 7 cents to produce a nickel.
So silly. That's so silly.
Yeah, so I'm assuming that at some point they will phase them out.
I'm kind of surprised it hadn't happened already.
Yeah, especially since most people use credit cards these days and stuff like that. So you don't necessarily need to have the small change, from that perspective.
Yeah, anymore.
Yeah. And then he mentions the dime. So when do you think they started using the dime?
Well, if it used to be a half dime way back in the 1700s, they had to have had the dime in the early 1700s. So I'll just say, let's go 1712.
No, but you're making one misconception here. The half dime. So this was all American currency. So it could only happen after the Revolution.
Oh yeah.
Because up until the Revolution, they were still using British currency.
The pound and everything. Right. Okay. Well then Then I'll just up it 100 years and say like 1810.
No, 1792.
Okay. Man.
The dime is the smallest and thinnest of all U.S. coins. And currently, who's depicted on the dime? Do you know?
Franklin D. Roosevelt. Because March of the Dimes when he had polio. He was like, if everybody sends in a dime, we can cure polio.
Right. And do you know where the term dime comes from?
Oh, let's see. It's gotta be something Latin. So I'm gonna say something Latin.
Okay, so it does eventually come from Latin. It comes from the French, the word dizme, okay, which means a tithe or a tenth of something, which obviously a dime is a tenth of a dollar, and that comes from the Latin word decima, which means to a tenth of something.
Okay. That makes sense.
Right. And how much do you think it costs to make a dime?
Oh, probably. Ooh, you know what? No, because it's thinner. It's thinner than the nickel, thinner than the penny. So let's say it takes 8 cents to make a dime.
5.65 cents.
Okay. Much better than I thought it was going to be. Hot dog.
Well, yeah, unlike the nickel, it actually, you know, costs it. It you, they make money on making them. Do you know what year they put Roosevelt on the dime?
1948. 46.
Very close.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Which, I mean, makes sense because, you know, he died in 45. So, you know, you generally don't put people on currency.
No, not really. Unless
until after they're
no, you said there. Currency, so no. Yeah.
Yeah.
This way they can't get mad at the picture you use.
That's true also. Well, they still have family members.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
That's right. Beforehand, they had the Mercury dime, which has a picture of Mercury. You know, the
planet or the god?
The god. The Roman god.
Answer, and I'm sure you do, but why Mercury?
They actually, well, first of all, it's considered one of the most beautiful U.S. coin designs ever produced. And why did they choose to use
like why him? Why?
Well, because it symbolizes liberty and freedom, and its wings symbolize freedom of thought.
Okay, that's kind of cool.
They used that from 1916 to 1945.
That's kind of cool.
Which is interesting because to use that during World War One into World War, you know, into the between the war years and then into World War Two. That's actually very interesting. They would choose to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that kind of seems counterintuitive in a weird way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. And then at this point, Peter then gives a response to George after him basically saying, you know, what I want is to, you know, do something big. And he responds by saying, you know, George, I feel that in a small way, we're doing something important, satisfying a fundamental urge. It's deep in the race for a man to want his own roof and walls and fireplace. And we're helping him get those things in our shabby little office. So he sort of throws that back in his face. You know, by the fact that he calls it a shabby little office, meaning that, well, also part of the idea here is that why is it a shabby little office? Because we're saving our money to help people. You know, George might say facetiously, you know, that the nickel and diming and wanting to save 3 cents on the length of pipe. But, you know, if you save 3 cents here and 3 cents there, 3 cents there, and eventually you're going to be able to use that money for something else. And that's the whole idea of the building and loan.
Yeah, it adds up really quick.
Yeah. And you know, Peter and Billy did a nice job of creating the you know, the building and loan. I mean, later on, you know, Potter will say some not nice things about Peter about that he wasn't a very good businessman. But the question is, you know, when you look at it, is Peter supposed to be a good businessman here, or is he supposed to be able to give the best service to, you know, Potter looks at it that someone's not a good businessman if they're not making money on their own, as opposed to.
He might not be a good businessman, but he's a good man of business.
Correct. And I think that's the idea here, that, you know, Peter knows how to help those that are in need of help and, you know, be able to stretch his dollar in order to be able to do that. And I mean, we find out later in the movie that George is even better than Peter is at doing this. Even though George isn't happy doing it, he still is, you know, he has the internal drive or the intuition to do these things. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so great watching him do them. You know, and I think Peter can see this. You know, I think he has a good enough intuition out of his own to see, you know, how well his son is fit to do this type of work. Mm-hmm. Now, do you think that would be something that's nature or nurture?
Ooh, I think it's a little bit of both, but leaning more towards nature, because we can be brought up and we can be raised a certain way. But when we start to interact with the world and we see how it is, be it in person or through the media or however, I think going back to that nurture is only going to help so much unless there's like deeper conversation to be had with it. Instead of just having a life experience and holding it within and kind of basing that, like having that life experience, reflecting on it, but also reflecting on it with, you know, part of that nurture or the family or a friend or something, I think that also kind of helps change and shift it as well.
Right. No, I think it's part of that. I think it's the idea that I think George is a product of both nature and nurture. You know, I think he has the internal inherent ability to do these things, but you know, growing up in the Bailey household where he sees how his father runs things, you know, he doesn't necessarily change the way that the building and loan works after his father is no longer running it. You know, he continues with that. So he uses his own skills to continue what his father started in the same manner that his father did it. So I think it's a combination of both, you know, that, you know, he has the, you know, it's not just that he was sitting at home and saw how his father does stuff and is doing it, but, you know, he naturally is able to do these things. You know, he naturally knows how to help others, which I guess is part of the whole theme of this movie, because he doesn't even notice how much he's helping people. Because he's doing it so naturally without even thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. He's not looking for the rub. He's just like, oh, no, it's what you're supposed to do.
That's right. And I think that works really well for him and for the movie, by the way that it does that. George begins to respond to his father and says, I know, Pop. So he basically knows his father's right here. You know, even though he has his internal feelings that he needs to break out and he needs to get away and do something else, but inside he still knows that helping people on a smaller scale could possibly have a bigger impact than helping, you know, on a larger scale, which might only have a smaller impact, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
So I find it really interesting that he's able to already notice this type of thing. So did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
No, I, outside of, you know, repeating myself, that it's just a really well-written and really well-acted, and it's just a great conversation.
Yeah, and I love how they're continuing to have their meal as they're doing this. I mean, you know, in this minute, Peter takes sugar and puts it into his coffee, you know, and you can see the steam coming out of his coffee or tea or whatever it is that he's drinking. You know, and their conversation is continuing. It's like, it's not, you know, I think I mentioned this yesterday or the day before that, you know, it's not as if they need to stop and look at one another while they're talking. You know, they can continue having, I know it bothers you to watch people eat as they're talking, but they continue their meal as they're doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and it feels very natural the way the whole conversation is flowing throughout this meal that the two of them are sharing together. It's this quality of time, you know, they have this quality 3 minutes between the father and son. And I think it works really well.
It does.
Okay. So every Wednesday I have a segment called It's a Wonderful Wednesday. So the idea behind this segment is the fact that it's a known fact that ever since this movie came out, there have been numerous copies of the basic premise of this movie reused in other movies, in TV shows. You get it in other media also. You get it in music. You get it in literature. You know, where the idea is, okay, what would happen if the main character either didn't exist or did something different, you know, along the way, that type of thing. So what I do every week in this segment is highlight a different reference or trope, however you want to call it, to this in somewhere in pop culture over the years. So this week, okay, I decided that I'm going to choose. Are you familiar with the TV show That 70s Show?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So they had an episode which is called It's a Wonderful Life. It was the first episode of season four. And the idea is that at the end of the season finale of the previous season, so Eric and Donna had broken up. Mm-hmm. And Eric made a comment that, "I wish that you never kissed me on that first night together." And this whole episode basically talks about the fact that, you know, that a guardian angel played by Wayne Knight shows up and convinces.
And sorry, I just imagined Wayne Knight is a guardian angel.
Yeah, he's actually very funny in this one, showing Eric what his life would have been like had Donna not kissed him, or had Donna not kissed him on that first night. You know, where his life would have gone. So, I mean, certain things in the episode go a little too far, but, you know, if you know the show, it's still very funny, you know, what they do with the different characters and stuff like that. Like, instead of Donna kissing Eric, she goes back home and Hyde is there, and she ends up starting a relationship with Hyde.
Okay.
And Eric then is he's the third wheel in their whole group, because he's the only one not with a girlfriend. What they basically show is things that happened later on in the 70s, things in the 80s, you know, how things happen here between these different characters and stuff like that. Basically, they show here that because of his relationship with Donna, Eric became more confident and assertive against, Red, but all the different things that he did. But in this new timeline that's been created, so he still remains repressed and never stands up for himself. And he ends up, being in the chess club in high school. And then as adult, he ends up, just selling waterbeds. He ends up getting in a relationship with someone who he's not even, who he's not in love with, but she bosses him around and constantly berates him. And he just takes it because he doesn't know how to, stand up for himself. And they end up showing that they have like a class reunion 10 years later. And, he sees how everyone has changed, except for the fact that, he has, he still believes that he has made the right decision of wishing that he'd never actually, gotten together with Donna. And Donna and Hyde end up getting married. Hyde spends time in jail, which is a little ironic. If anyone knows about what's going on nowadays with Danny Masterson, Kelso and Jackie keep they have an on and off relationship over the years. Kelso marries someone else, but he keeps having flings with Jackie, and then Kelso actually ends up getting fat and works for Eric with what he's doing. Donna ends up getting tattoos all the time, and she needs to support her family because Hyde is constantly in prison. So Fez basically doesn't really become part of the group, and then he becomes he creates an 80s type band, with like a very strange hairstyle, like Flock of Seagull type of hairstyle and stuff like that. He doesn't really know that his life is as bad as it is, because in the original timeline, Fez is part of the group, that type of thing. Yeah. Kitty and Red end up having another kid, and it's the son that Red claims he always wanted. So, you know, he treats this little kid so much better than he treats Eric.
Of course.
Of course. So, yeah, it's just a lot of fun. You know, for people who know the show, you know, you get to see this alternate timeline. I mean, the show sort of leaves it for us to debate whether it really happened or whether it's just a dream, you know, about the whole thing. But it's still a fun way of looking at, you know, how things would be different in the show had he and Donna not gotten together, you know, in the first place. So, yeah. That's a fun one to check out. If you've never seen the show, you should go check it out. It's a very funny show. It's one of the shows that I actually want to rewatch one of these days, you know, straight through again.
I might have to do that too. I used to watch it all the time in high school. All the time.
Yeah, it's a great show. Nick, you want to once again tell us where the people can find Nick Rehak?
They can find me over at rabbitholepodcasts.com. There's a myriad of podcasts over there. I'm fortunate enough to be on two of those shows. One of them is called Lyrical Innuendo. Bubba Weed and myself take a deep dive into the lyrics of popular songs from the history of music, and we analyze whether they're about sex, drugs, or maybe it's just good old-fashioned rock and roll. There's another show that I'm on. It's newer to the Rabbit Hole family. It's called Play MST for Me. Jason Soto is a hardcore, super, super, super Mystery Science Theater 3000 fan, and I've never seen a show, an episode of the show in my life. And rather than go, hey, well, here's a couple of my favorites, you should see the show, instead started a podcast, and we're watching every single episode of the show and talking about it. And it's been a lot of fun so far. And I just see nothing but good times ahead. So find us over rabbitholepodcast.com or wherever you get your podcast.
All right, cool. And while you're doing that, you can rate, review, and subscribe on any podcast you might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter. So until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.